News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday. Hope we can make your Saturday even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date. Well, this week we're not bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture because today is May the 4th. That's right. May the 4th be with you. It is Star Wars Day. And so we are going to plunge into all things Star Wars, kind of talk a little bit about the history of the franchise, the future of the franchise. And joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this show, is my very own Yoda from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Thank you for having me. try to stumble through this introduction. I'm glad to be here, and I'm stoked to be talking about Star Wars. You know, there have been highs and lows over the years. The fandom has become divided in some ways, but I think we can all just kind of think about a time in our lives when Star Wars was something that meant something to us. I know that I was born in 1982, and as long as I've been alive, I feel like Star Wars has been a part of my life. I certainly don't remember becoming a fan, and I love those original trilogies so much. I like a lot of what they've been doing with Disney lately, but before we did kind of jump into some of our fun memories, I think we should probably acknowledge a recent tragedy involving somebody very closely related to the Star Wars universe, Leo.
Yeah, that being, of course, Warwick Davis, who probably is best known for playing Wicket W. Warwick in Return of the Jedi, but has been in a number of the Star Wars films in a variety of roles, and is somebody very, very closely associated with the property, as well as other things like he was in the Harry Potter films, he was in Willow, he was in Leprechaun. He was the title character in Leprechaun. Very well-known and very beloved actor. And his family kind of became part of the Star Wars family. He travels with his family a lot. Unfortunately, lost his wife just a couple weeks ago. So our hearts go out to him and his family for the loss and to the Star Wars family in general. You know, that's something that hits close. We've unfortunately lost a lot of the actors from the original trilogy at this point. We've still got Harrison Ford with us. We've still got Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels. But you know, even losing some of the ones who aren't necessarily as old. You know, we lost Carrie Fisher way too soon, of course.
And speaking of which, Samantha Davis was 53 at the time of her death, so just incredibly young, and it is a tragedy.
Yeah, so don't want to start off on a sad note, but we do want to make sure that we acknowledge that and that that our hearts are with Warwick Davis and his family and in this time. But I think that's the thing about Star Wars for those of us who have grown up with it pretty much our entire lives and have been fans since before we can remember being fans, that these characters and to some extent the actors who played them kind of become part of the family to us in a way. And I think that's one of the things that is kind of magical about this franchise is that even when there's a character we don't like, those actors get embraced.
Yeah, there's a really interesting recent example of that with Ahmed Best, who was notoriously panned and shamed for portraying Jar Jar Binks and recently just kind of had this, like, rising like a phoenix from ashes moment in the Obi-Wan series. So while there will always be certain segments of critics who really do like to, like, tear this stuff down from time to time, and I'm even guilty of it. It's amazing to see that the fans are willing to like build it back up and champion people who historically have gotten a pretty tough run at it. Hey, same with Hayden Christensen, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a number of actors that you can say that about from both the, not so much with the original trilogy. Like the original trilogy, a lot of people just seem to view that as sacrosanct, and
we just love them all. Yeah,
yeah, but definitely with the prequel and sequel trilogies, there are actors that have been, I think, very much unfairly abused for their, you know, that's the whole dark side of the fandom. There is, you know, at the risk of making a dark side pun, because the dark side of the Force versus the dark side of fandom, there is a dark side to Star Wars fandom, and there is an extent to which it seems like nobody hates Star Wars like Star Wars supposed fans. And it does become a point where you kind of don't want to get tarred with that brush a little bit. And that's something we'll maybe talk about a little bit more in the later in the program. We're also going to talk a little bit, you mentioned Jar Jar Binks. We're definitely going to be talking more about Jar Jar Binks later in the program, because it's 25 years this year since The Phantom Menace was released. So we're going to take a little bit of a deep dive into that film in particular a little later in the show. But before we get into any of that, Jeremy, just kind of, what does Star Wars mean to you at this point in your life?
Right now, currently, I'm not choosing to hate it. I'm just not engaging with it in the way that I used to. And something that we're going to circle back around to is just the way that it has continued to grow and evolve and take forms in different medias and all of that stuff. But one of my last just huge, really positive experiences with Star Wars was going to Galaxy's Edge for the first time. And just the way that being immersed in that world brings me back to childhood moments of like where the lines of fantasy and reality almost blur in a way, and you're playing with the action figures and you're just really a part of the Star Wars universe. And Galaxy's Edge, I think, recreates that so incredibly well. The one ride, not the Millennium Falcon ride, but the Rise of the Resistance ride is just freaking incredible. And it's like actually being a part of the Star Wars movie. So that's just something I will always be like, hey, no matter what happens with the current landscape, there's something so childlike and awesome about going to Galaxy's Edge.
See, I've got to go. I haven't been yet, and I want to have that experience, because I think when you get to the root of it, that's what everybody's looking for in Star Wars. They're looking to feel like they're 5 years old again.
And that's tough.
It is, and I think that's why, you know, the sequel trilogy initially got panned by a lot of fans. The prequel trilogy initially got panned by a lot of fans. And then you have these younger fans that their first Star Wars was the prequel trilogy, and they they revere that, and then they look down on the sequel trilogy, or they look down on some of the series, and so there is that kind of forever chasing that high of being 5 years old and having your mind blown by Star Wars.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, you're never gonna be five again.
How old were you when the first Star Wars came out?
I think I was right about five, or maybe just a little younger than that. I don't have a very clear memory of seeing the first one for the first time. I do have a very clear memory of seeing Empire for the first time.
Awesome.
That I would have been like 7 or 8, and I remember very clearly going to see it on opening day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And Empire's got a big anniversary coming up next year, because 45 years for Empire next year. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the same way, Jeremy, and even though I'm a little older than you, like, Star Wars has just kind of always been there. Even though I was born before the first one came out, I was not, you know, in any way conscious of a whole lot before.
Sure, yeah.
Before Star Wars existed, or at least I don't have any kind of real strong memories of. So it is a part of my life from the very beginning. I have been a fan for my whole life. I'm not afraid to call myself a fan. I will always be a fan of the franchise.
Same.
I don't want to be one of those fans. One of those negative Nelly fans. Like, yeah, there's stuff I like and there's stuff I don't like, but I don't feel I am not the "you ruined my childhood" guy.
No,
my childhood's
still
there. And
I find myself being even a little more critical than you are in some ways. But at the same time, like, I don't want to steal anybody's joy. And ultimately, when you hear me talk, I want everybody to understand it's just one guy's dumb opinion. I have no desire to, like, indoctrinate or change the way that anybody thinks or feels about the things that we discuss.
Well, we'll get more into those dumb opinions when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. We are talking about all things Star Wars on today's show. And wanted to kind of take this next part of the show to kind of talk about some of the stuff that's upcoming. There's been a whole lot of movies and TV series that have been announced for the future of Star Wars. But we have a new series coming to Disney Plus in just a month. Starting on June 4th, we're going to have Star Wars The Acolyte that is going to be unveiling itself on Disney Plus. There's been a trailer that's been out on this for a while. I don't think we've actually talked about the trailer for this on the show at all either. But
we haven't.
But this is coming to us from Leslie Headland, who was the creator of Russian Doll, which is the series with... why is her name just going out of my head?
That lady.
Natasha Leone.
I'll look it up.
Natasha Leone.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Yeah. So this is a mystery for focusing on a former Padawan who teams up with her Jedi master. Great cast on this. We've got Lee Jung-jae from Squid Game, Daphne Keene, who of course was Laura or X-23 in Logan.
Right.
Manny Jacinto, Dean Charles Chapman from Game of Thrones, Carrie Ann Moss. We all know who she is.
Awesome.
I hope. We're also getting our first Wookiee Jedi in this. Juna Sutamo, who is the guy who's taken over the role of Chewbacca from Peter Mayhew. He's playing a Wookiee Jedi in this. So that's pretty cool. I'm kind of here for the stuff that's not focusing on the Skywalker of it all.
Absolutely.
And this does not seem like it's going to be focusing on the Skywalker of it all, but it is going to have Jedis in it, which is sometimes, you know, I like the Jedi too. This is going to be set in the latter days of the High Republic. So this is going to be really before everything that we've seen so far. This is going to be because Phantom Menace is kind of the beginning of the end of the High Republic. So this will be like right in that pre-Phantom Menace period, right in that, or maybe right in that same timeline period. So do you have any thoughts about The Acolyte? Is this something you're excited for, Jeremy?
So I echo a lot of what you said. Looking at the trailer, I like what I see. I love Carrie Ann Moss. The fact that you just told me that the Wookiee is going to be a Jedi, that's dope. It's got a lot of the kind of like wire work, martial arts stuff. It's got a specific name to it that's escaping me right now, but
wire
things
foo.
Like you'd see in Crouching Wire Foo, that is definitely a way of saying it. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Mm-hmm. I do like the fact that it's kind of set in the New Republic time period and or High Republic, one or the other.
High Republic. New Republic High would be Republic. After would be after Empire or after Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, look, aesthetically, I think it looks awesome. I like the cast. There's really nothing about what I'm seeing that would cause me any sort of turn me off to the project. I believe it's like the worst reviewed or the worst interacted trailer for a Star Wars property on YouTube. I say that to say two things. First, that is never going to be a metric of quality. Second, it might be a metric of how enthusiastic people are for it. I don't understand what they're seeing in it that has them up in arms other than women and minorities. And if that's the case, then like whatever. But maybe there's something else that just isn't resonating with people that I'm missing.
Yeah, there is one thing I heard about this is that they made a point of having a couple people in the writer's room on the show that had not seen any Star Wars stuff before.
Right.
But I think that's interesting because it does bring a new perspective and it makes it so that it doesn't just have to. One of the things I think Star Wars can do sometimes is just rely too much on the lore.
Yeah.
And the love and not rely on actual quality storytelling. And so I think that's important that they have somebody, a voice in the room that isn't hung up on the lore and is there to tell the story. So I'm excited about that. The next thing we're getting after that, that's going to be coming later in 2024, is a series called Skeleton Crew. This is going to be headed up by John Watts, who is the director of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies.
Heard of him?
Going to star Jude Law as kind of like the den father of a group of kids. This is going to take place in the same time period as The Mandalorian. And John Watts has been describing it as a throwback to 80s Amblin movies like The Goonies. So I'm here for Goonies in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And Jude Law is just an incredible actor. Got such a good filmography. So I agree there's not a whole lot of information out about this one. But the idea of throwing it back to the Amblin era of movies is exciting. So I'll be keeping an eye out for this one. And then it looks like we've got the
Academy Award winning directors of Everything Everywhere All at Once. The Daniels have directed an episode of this series too. So
that's very cool.
Another reason to look forward to that. Coming sometime in 2025, we don't know exactly when yet, is season 2 of Andor. Now that I am very much looking forward to, because season 1 of Andor was some of the best Star Wars we've ever had. And
I'm going to be honest, this is the one out of all of them that I am like looking forward to watching. And we'll talk a little bit more about just the nature of the way that Star Wars is producing stuff. But the season 1 of this reinforced my love of Star Wars in a way that most of the Disney Plus series up to that point hadn't. So I'm really hype about more from Andor as a character and more from that story.
I am too, and we're going to see in this second season. First season really focused on how Andor came into the rebellion. This second season is going to take us straight up from where season 1 ended to the beginning of Rogue One. So we're going to probably see some other characters from Rogue One show up in season 2. And I'm kind of excited about that, especially if we get K2SO.
Awesome character.
Yeah. So, and I think we will. So looking forward to that. Coming up in 2026, the next movie to come to the big screen for Star Wars that we know of is going to be following up on The Mandalorian. It is going to be called The Mandalorian and Grogu. Don't love that title. That title's a little unwieldy, but, you know, okay, I understand why they want to get Grogu out in the title, because he's been the breakout character of the last, 5 to 10 years of the Star Wars franchise. So
yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the Mandalorian series. They have not announced a season 4. So I'm looking forward to seeing these characters again for sure.
This is where we're going to start to deviate a little bit. And as I said in the first segment, not here to change anybody's minds, but I have not been that big a fan of The Mandalorian. I feel like Grogu is one of the worst things to happen to Star Wars in the last decade, and I am already over it. So this to me is like, it feels like very classic Disney era Lucasfilm, just more of the same. You like this? Here's a lot more of it.
Wow, that is not what I expected to hear out of you, Jeremy.
Sorry. You know, you and I talked about it episode to episode, and I have enjoyed it. It's middling. It's not really exciting.
No faith in Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. Jon Favreau's directing it.
Yeah, he makes good movies. There's no question about that. Look, I'll be there opening weekend, and I will probably eat my words and enjoy it. But for right now, I'm just like, of all of the things that are interesting to me, this is more of the same as opposed to something, even like The Acolyte, which is something more new.
So do you have the same feelings about a potential season 2 of Ahsoka? Because
that's
out there as well.
I didn't like Ahsoka very much, Julio.
You know, I know there are some people that felt that way. I liked it a lot, so I'm here for more of that. I like the characters. I like the actors. I think Dave Filoni is doing God's work, man. So
yeah,
I'm here for it. All right, so we have sometime in the future a new movie starring Rey, played by Daisy Ridley. Going to be coming to us from. Oh, no, wait, hold on. Before we get to that, we've got the movie that was originally Damon Lindelof was working on it, then he backed away from it, and now it is being helmed by Sharmeen Obaid-Chinoy. And this is set in the New Jedi Order era that's going to take place about a decade after Rise of Skywalker. This is the one with Rey. I apologize. So this is the one with Daisy Ridley building the new Jedi Order. What do we think of that? Are you excited to see more of Rey?
I like Rey. I think this is a bad move. I think the quicker that we move on from the things that were so divisive about the sequels and kind of put this current funk over the fandom, I feel like as great as Rey was, it's just a hearkening back to a time that, like, look, Rise of Skywalker stinks. It is such a freaking bad movie, and unfortunately, that was the end of the sequel trilogy.
Do not agree with you.
You disagree?
I disagree with you there. I do. I think that it gets an unfairly bad rep, and
it's awful.
And I think that we'll talk about this a little bit more when we talk about Phantom Menace later on, about how things come to be reappraised over time. So you're given that your apathy towards the Dave Filoni end of the Star Wars universe, I guess you're not excited about his Star Wars movie where it's going to kind of sum up everything that we've seen from Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett and Ahsoka.
He's earned it. I'm extremely happy for Dave Filoni, and I would love to see what he does in live action and on the big screen. So regardless of the fact that, like, from a narrative standpoint, this isn't the stuff I'm the most interested in, the meta of it, like, as a movie lover and somebody who loves storytelling, I think Dave Filoni has earned this spot in a unique way that very few people have before them.
Now, how do you feel about James Mangold going 25,000 years before the original Star Wars trilogy to tell a story about the origins of the Force?
Mangold is one of the best filmmakers working right now. I am always going to get my ears perked up when I hear that he's attached to a project with the Star Wars universe. I really wonder how much of weight any one person is actually able to carry. Like, I doubt that this is going to be Mangold's vision in the way that you would see in something like 310 to Yuma or something like that. So he's made good movies. He's also made bad studio movies, but I'm interested.
And then there's some other stuff that's farther out in the future, so we won't spend a lot of time, but Taika Waititi's got a Star Wars film in development. There's still this possibility of a Lando Calrissian movie with Donald Glover, and Sean Levy from Free Guy and Deadpool possibly doing a Star Wars movie off in the far future. We got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Go need that! Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube as we're celebrating May the 4th, Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. And yes, I did play that just to bring the hate down upon me from all of the Star Wars purists. That was Jedi Rocks from the remastered and re-engineered version of Return of the Jedi. That's the song that's in that's the new song that's put into the Jabba's Palace scene. That's different
song
from
kind of slaps.
You know, it kind of does. I mean, it's dumb as hell.
Out of it.
It's dumb as hell, and they did not really need to replace the scene from the original movie, but it's goofy. It's fun. You know, so what? But it brings me to a point because a lot of people wouldn't even know the difference. A lot of people know that there was a remastered version of Return of the Jedi that, and of all the three original Star Wars movies, that changed some stuff from the originals in terms of bringing the effects further up to date and putting in some scenes and correcting some things. And there's some things that we can argue about that they changed that were for the good or for the nil. Most infamously, the scene in the cantina in the original Star Wars where, let's just set the record straight here. Han didn't shoot first. Han shot only.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
Greedo didn't even get a shot off. So this Han shot first or Greedo shot first or whatever, there's not even a debate. Han shot only in the original movie. And that is one thing I'm pretty firm on, that I'm down with Han being so quick on the draw that Greedo doesn't even get a shot off. But yeah, most people don't care. Like the people that are casuals, they don't care. And that's the thing. Star Wars used to be once upon a time for everybody. Like there are very, very few people that did not see, that have not seen. There's a scene in How I Met Your Mother where it's revealed that somewhere in like the middle, like fourth of the season, Ted, our protagonist, who is a huge Star Wars fan, is engaged to a woman named Stella, finds out she's never seen Star Wars, tells his best buddy Marshall this, and Marshall freaks out. She says, she's never seen Star Wars? How can she's never seen Star Wars? The only people that haven't seen Star Wars were the people in Star Wars, and that's because they lived it, Ted. They lived the Star Wars. So, you know, there's some truth to that. Like, there, you know, the first three movies were so widely seen that they are such a part of the fabric of pop culture that they are kind of for everybody. That's why there was so much excitement in 99 with The Phantom Menace. And there were first, there'd been a couple other little Star Wars projects that, you know, were easily ignored. There were the Droids and Ewoks animated series. There were the Ewoks live action TV movies, but there wasn't, you know, and of course there was the Star Wars holiday special, about which the less said, the better, but that wasn't, you didn't need any of that. And there were novels and there were comics and stuff like that, but none of that was like vital to being a Star Wars fan.
Right.
You could say you were a Star Wars fan. And as long as you knew those three movies, you were a Star Wars fan, and those, and everybody was a Star Wars fan. You know, there were the reviews were outstanding on all three movies, maybe a little bit lower on Return of the Jedi, but overall, you know, it's seen as a prestige and quality franchise and something that, you know, was just part of the general fabric of pop culture. I don't necessarily think that's true anymore. I do think that everybody kind of is aware of Star Wars and they're aware of certain key characters and things like that, but they don't necessarily follow all of the things that are kind of now highly important to have, to know, to catch up with Star Wars. And that's, at the very least, all nine plus two spinoff movies, so 11 live action movies, and the various series that have come since then. To say nothing of the animation and the comics and the novels and, you know, all of the stuff that's out there. Here's my question, Jeremy. Is Star Wars too niche now to ever be mainstream again?
It's really interesting because on one hand, I would say it's more widely distributed than ever before. And I guess when I say that, it's like, we're getting it on streaming apps. We're getting it in the movie theaters. We're getting just a constant stream of it. And I also think it's been to the detriment, for one, when it comes to fan excitement, for each property, but also, and probably even more importantly to your point, once it begins to feel like you're being kind of pushed out by such a steady stream of content, it's like, can I even jump back in and know what's going on anymore? I didn't see season 3 of The Mandalorian, or I didn't see the second half of Boba Fett. By missing that, am I going to be missing something when I go into the movie? And like you said, when it was the original trilogy, that was three movies that you could sit down and watch, and all of a sudden now you can be a Star Wars fan. You know the story from beginning to end. Again, what, 20 years later, 15 years later, whatever it was before the prequels came out, you get three more movies. Nice, tidy, clean. If the Star Wars sequels that were released by Disney a few years back would have just been the next trilogy and that would have been the end of it, I think we'd still be in a pretty good place right now. But directly to answer your question, yes, I think it has niched down so much that casual fans aren't going to be converted like they used to be.
Do you think that some of that has to do with the negativity that can be seen in Star Wars fandoms amongst some people that like to set themselves up as being the true fans?
That's a really good point.
Do you think that negativity that spreads out of a certain element of the fandom puts people off from even wanting to become Star Wars fans?
So, on one hand, I would say any sort of negativity perpetuated by a group of people that are supposedly the ones who are into it is going to be off-putting, and people outside of that are going to look at it a little bit sideways. That said, I don't know if there's anybody that's like, should I watch Star Wars, and then goes on to the internet and starts looking at Star Wars content before deciding, but maybe I'm just older and that's not the way that I choose to engage with media. But I think it's mostly Star Wars fans who are aware of the behavior of Star Wars fans more than people outside of that. What do you think?
I think it's more the, oh, you're a Star Wars fan? Well, prove it. Like that kind of element that I think.
Yeah.
Really, yeah. The same kind of element that, you know, the cliche of a guy seeing a girl wearing a band t-shirt. Oh, you're a fan of that band? Prove it. Name five songs.
Comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, that stereotype can be very real. And there are those kinds of quote unquote fans out there. And to me, those people aren't real fans. To me, fandom is about welcoming people that like the same stuff you do, and maybe they're just getting into it, and you help them along the way, and you help them, oh, well, you got to check out this part, and you got to, you know, this is so cool, wait till you see this, you know, have you read this book, have you read this, you know, oh, I'll lend you my copy, you know, that's fandom to me. That kind of attitude is what spreads the positivity and the joy of fandom and draws people in. And I worry about that negative side of the fandom putting people off. I do think that some of it is also that it can seem impenetrable. And I know there are other franchises that I maybe didn't grow up with that I feel that way about. I feel that way about a lot of anime. I feel like I should check out some more anime than I do. But I feel like I don't know where to start, and I just don't have the energy. Yeah, I feel that way
and
about the show Supernatural.
I feel that way about something like, I think I feel that way about something like Star Trek because there's so much of it.
Yeah. And the reality is, you know, if you're really interested in something, you can dive in anywhere and find your way. You know, you're eventually going to catch up. You know, when I was a kid reading comic books, I didn't start reading Superman from number one.
Right, that's a good
point. I didn't, you know, there were, you know, 150 issues of the Justice League before I got my first issue. You know, so the truth of it is you can find your way in and get, I mean, same thing, like if you're looking at like something like a soap opera. If you're going to start watching Days of Our Lives today, you're not starting back in 1966 or whatever year it was that Days of Our Lives started, but, you know, the show's been around for 50 plus years. But yet new people still get into soap operas. So, you know, the truth is you can find your way in if you choose to. And you don't necessarily have to start at any particular point. You can start wherever you want to start.
And do you think maybe there's an overemphasis in the minds of people about how important the intricate parts of the lore are? Like, you could probably just start with Mandalorian and it tell a complete story, even if you're not getting all of the nuances and the history that goes around it.
Yeah, and I think Ahsoka's a good proof of that because I haven't seen all of the animated stuff, all the Clone Wars and Rebels and all of that, but I was still able to get into Ahsoka. So I think that's a great example of that. But yeah, I mean, if you're interested, dive in. You might find something you like. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
A long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. Their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. Oh my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Did you know this junkyard slave isn't even old enough to shave? But he can use the force, they say. Do you see him hitting on the queen? Though he's just 9 and she's 14. Yeah, he's probably gonna marry her someday. C-3PO, and I've heard how fast his pod can go. And we were broke, it's true. So we made a wager or two. He was a prepubescent flying ace. And the minute Jabba started off that race, well, I knew who would win first place. Oh, yes, it was. Gonna be a Jedi.
News Radio 923 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. We are celebrating Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. And we're going to wrap up here with a little 25th anniversary look back on a movie that you just heard about half the plot of right there. Of course, being The Phantom Menace. Song The Saga Begins by Weird Al Yankovic kind of tells the whole story of that movie in a more encapsulated form. But that movie is turning 25 this year. And in fact, if you so desire, you can go out to theaters and see it this weekend. They did re-release it to theaters this weekend. So this is a movie that has a mixed reception. I think it's fair to say. I think it got pretty okay reviews when it originally came out. Not anywhere near the kind of reviews that the original trilogy got, of course, but pretty okay reviews. But this was the start of a new trilogy, a prequel trilogy. And there is a large segment of fandom that has really looked down upon these prequels. But there, I think, really has been kind of a critical reappraisal of them in the past few years. And I'm interested in talking a little bit about that, Jeremy, because I'm interested to know where that comes from. Do you think that kind of critical, first of all, before we get into thinking about where that comes from, what's your thought on The Phantom Menace 25 years later? Is this a movie that you like? Is it a movie you go back to? Or do you look down your nose at this one?
So, even though Star Wars had been a part of my life ever since I can remember, and I did go and see the remastered versions of them in the theaters, The Phantom Menace was the first Star Wars movie that I ever saw. I mean, like, this the first time I saw a new Star Wars movie theatrically that I had never seen prior to going to the movie theater. So the minute the theme hits at the beginning, the minute that Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon ignite their lightsabers for the first time, like, I loved it. I wasn't critical-minded. I was along for the ride. I had a really good time with it. I don't remember hating Jar Jar Binks. I also don't remember really liking Jar Jar Binks. But as far as, like, even to this day, Darth Maul is one of the coolest villains that we ever got in a Star Wars movie. Duel of Fates is a freaking awesomely composed John Williams song, and that fight sequence at the end is just fantastic. So there are things about this movie that certainly don't work. I feel like George Lucas's writing, in a way, was more sophisticated with the prequels, but he just seemed completely on autopilot when it came to directing his actors and writing dialogue that was, like, relatable or engaging or made the characters emotionally interesting. So lots of interesting stuff about it that really worked, and lots of things about it that I just feel like could have been done a whole lot better. But overall, I had a good time watching it.
Yeah, I think that there are the things that are great about this movie are really great. The Darth Maul stuff, the battle at the end, the pod racing sequence is incredible. It's some of
it
the
is.
Most exciting. But then you get to the stuff that people tend to look down on, and it's Jar Jar. It's to some extent people being very hard on Jake Lloyd as an actor when you're talking about, you know, a 7-year-old kid? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, things like that certain points of the parts of the fandom went as far as to attack the actors, which you should never do. It's never the actor's fault. Maybe the performance might be the actor's fault, but they didn't create the character. They didn't write the character. They were doing what they were asked to do by the director. You want to get mad at the writer and the director. Don't take it.
They didn't even cast themselves. They just went and auditioned and ended up being in a movie. Like, there were so many checks and balances before that phase. You can't blame the actors for it.
I think that overall, The Phantom Menace is a better movie than it sometimes gets credit for being. And I think that that's true to some extent of all three of the prequel films. I also really like the sequel trilogy. There's now these people that hate on the sequel trilogy and love the prequel trilogy. So here's my question, Jeremy. I do think that the prequel trilogy has kind of been creatively reassessed over the past few years, and it has a better reputation now than it did even, say, like 5-10 years ago. Do you think that that is because of the stuff that set the groundwork for that has come after, a lot of the stuff that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau have been involved with the Clone Wars animated series and Rebels and the stuff that has followed that into the new live action series? Do you think that that has changed people's perspective on the original trilogy, or the prequel trilogy?
I mean, that's got to be a huge factor in it. I think the biggest factor is a simple psychology one. Though, to your point, as you continue to build out this world, it brings people back to the very beginning of where a lot of this stuff started. But the movie was 25 years ago, so our first generation of fans of the prequels are now 30 years old. They're fully grown adults who, like us, spent their entire lives exposed to this version of Star Wars. It touched them emotionally and creatively when they were very, very young, and they nurtured that over the years. And now they have the same sentimentality about the prequels that we did about the original trilogy.
I think that's absolutely true. I think that's a big part of the critical reassessment of these movies. Because not only that, you have these people who are now, let's say, 35, 40, that, you know, even into like their mid-40s, let's say 35 to 45. So we're talking millennials here mainly. They are now the people that are in position of driving opinion in terms of, you know, being the critics and being the journalists and being the, you know, the people who's our opinion leaders. And to where people that are a little older, let's say, you know, Gen X boomers, aren't necessarily having the same amount of weight in the critical community. There is certainly still have a voice, and there's still a lot of that age group of people out there too. But I think that that's the biggest factor. Like, these are now a whole other generation's Star Wars childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not necessarily looking back at them with the critical intensity that someone's a little older looks at them with. They're looking, you know, I hear the same things about people saying things like, oh, you got to realize that the Goonies sucks. No, the Goonies doesn't suck. But above and beyond that, it doesn't suck because you were 12 when you saw it the first time.
Right.
And it's a beloved part of your childhood. same kind of things going on here. You know, for there's a lot of people who are, and I mean, even younger than, probably even younger, you could probably say 25 to 45, who grew up with the prequel trilogy. And that is, you know, their, for some of them, their first Star Wars. You look at, you know, the great line in Captain America Civil War, where Tom Holland Spider-Man, who is, you know, something like 15, 16 in that movie, saying to these, you know, adults in their 40s, you ever see that really old movie, The Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, we're talking about a 25-year-old film, and we're not talking about the originals. It is wild to think about just in terms of how long this has been part of the cultural zeitgeist. And if you think about it from a young person's perspective, at the age that you're watching, Jurassic Park is come and gone. We're getting VFX heavy movies. And so you put a movie on in front of a child and you set them in front of 1976 A Star Wars. And then you set another kid in front of The Phantom Menace. One of those things is going to probably resonate a lot more than the other because of the visual effects, because of the more current technology being utilized, where some people probably do look at the original trilogy and see something extremely dated, where to us it was revolutionary and groundbreaking.
Well, see, I actually think that's one of the places the prequel trilogy falls down. I think it was over-reliant on CGI, and I think we're getting into this era now where we're combining practical with CGI. And that's what I want to see. Like, that's what works. It worked really well in the sequel trilogy. It's working really well in a lot of other science fiction right now. But that's about all the time we've got. Happy May the 4th to you. May the 4th be with you. We will be back next week to get on to more current pop culture and entertainment. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.